Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome back to another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast. We are long overdue for a new episode here, so happy to be back and chatting with everybody. Today we have a guest that is no stranger to the podcast, and we decided we're going to name her reoccurring guest appearances as Repro with Rihanna. So thank you, Rihanna, for joining us again today. And for anybody that hasn't listened, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your background?
You bet. All right. Welcome to Repro with Rihanna. This is like a dream come true for me to have my own series. My name is Rihanna Frost. I have worked with Transova for 5 years as a professional services technician. So I'm the gal that's doing the OPUs behind the cow, putting in embryos, flushing out embryos, that sort of thing. I've also done a lot of training of individuals at Transova. And for about the last year, I've been the director of the professional services technicians, which means I oversee all of our technicians and support them from a technical perspective nationwide. So I go around and make sure our technicians are doing their jobs correctly and giving them the information they need that is up and coming and new data that might support them in what they're doing. So yeah, this is, I think, my fourth time on the podcast. I'm very excited. I love coming and talking to you guys and answering all of the questions that you guys have for us. And I think with that, that's probably enough of an introduction about myself.
Well, we appreciate you coming on here. And I think we might have mentioned that Rihanna has done some internal presentations and sessions for our own team. And Emily and I saw them and we saw what a good job she does. And we said, you have to be careful being very good at your job like that, because the marketing team will find you and we will use you. And so we are glad to have a recurring series with you, because you do such an excellent job at explaining what could be considered complex topics. So we appreciate that you are willing to put up with us.
Of course.
Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritty and the first question. What is Pluset? Why has there been an uptick in usage this year? Can you explain that to us?
Yes, I can. So Pluset is going to be an equivalent of Follitropin. So for a lot of our clients, they're used to being sent and utilizing the product Follitropin, which is made by Vetoquinol here in the United States, to superovulate their donors. So superovulation would be for IVF or for ET. In the past year and a half, we've seen an uptick in Pluset, and all of a sudden it's hit our market in the United States because a year and a half ago, we had a shortage of Follitropin. The company itself wasn't able to fulfill orders. They weren't able to get the product necessarily to make the Follitropin so that we could utilize it. So we had to come up with a backup plan so that we could still provide a stimulation product to our clients. And so Pluset was conditionally approved in the United States. So the company that owns them, I believe, is Collier, and they're from Europe, I believe. And so it's the same type of product that we are working with. So Pluset, like I said, is the equivalent of Follitropin. But the difference in the two products is that Pluset is actually more concentrated in FSH, which is the product that, or the hormone that is actually stimulating a response in your cows. Pluset has 1,000 international units of FSH in one bottle, whereas your Follitropin is going to have 700 international units. So really, that's the main difference between those two products when it comes to comparing them side by side. You still administer Pluset the same way you administer Follitropin, and it gets reconstituted very similarly or in the same way that Follitropin does.
Perfect. You know, these are great questions because, as you said, we were using that at the beginning of the year with for clients. And so I think there's been confusion as to why this over that. And you explain the differences very well. And maybe talk about are, you know, is Pluset going to continue to be prescribed or available in the U.S.? Because you said it was just not totally approved. Maybe speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, I can definitely do that. So as of right now, it's still a conditional approval. There are several units of Pluset within the United States that we have on hand right now at Transova and that we can purchase from the company that makes Pluset. So they were able to get quite a few units over here. The last I heard from them, which was last fall, is that they are trying to work on getting final approval to allow Pluset in the United States as a second option to stimulate your donors. But that process still takes a long time. It has to go through the FDA, get approved, that sort of thing. But for right now, we still have a lot of units of Pluset that we can purchase or that we can provide to you through Transova to utilize. So it's not going anywhere. But we also just want to make sure our clients are aware that Follotropin is still available. The product is now, we can now get the product as needed. We also just have this second product that also needs used up, which would be Pluset.
Rihanna, you mentioned the difference in concentration, kind of as the difference between the two is kind of the main bullet point that I took away from that. But what about, do you see a difference in results due to the difference in concentration? Kind of walk through the differences, you know, on the end side of the results.
Yep. That is a great question because that is like, if I was a person running animals, I would be like, I'm not switching. Like, I'm not switching from what I know to a product that you're not giving me much data on. But don't you worry, I've got the data. I actually just presented on some of this stuff internally last week to our PSTs. So in a nutshell, when you look at number of embryos created by from an animal that has been stimulated with follotropin versus the number of embryos that have been created from an animal stimulated with Pluset, there is no difference. So Pluset performs the same way in our donors as follotropin has been performing in those donors. So if your donor on average makes 9.2 embryos each time on follotropin, she's going to make 9 to 9.2 embryos again on Pluset. Like, that's what you can expect as a client. The other thing that we need people to keep in mind with Pluset is since it is a higher concentration, we actually send you a lower dose. So what you'll probably see is maybe your cow was running on 4G, 8D, which means she was getting 8 cc's total of follotropin before. If you're now on Pluset, she's most likely going to be getting 6 cc's of that FSH product instead because it's a higher concentration. And so we take into account that Pluset has a higher concentration, so we decrease the dose on our end so that the cow isn't getting too much FSH. I would say along with that is another concern that people have is the pricing point that Pluset is at. And I'll just go ahead and touch on that a little bit as well. We have gotten to a point within our system that a bottle of Pluset is going to be more expensive than follotropin. But that's because you're getting what I'll call more bang for your buck from an international units of FSH perspective. So you're just paying for the extra FSH that's actually in the Pluset bottle than what is in your follotropin bottle. But when we compare it on a per mil basis, so if we're running your donors like at the Missouri location, they live with us, you're only getting billed on a per mil basis. And so you're not going to see a change in your bill because on a per mil basis, the price is equivalent between follotropin and Pluset because we take into account we have to lower the dose.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great information. So if anybody was concerned about, you know, Pluset versus follotropin, there's really no difference. It's just a backup option that we needed in a pinch. So thank you for sharing that, Rihanna. Is there anything that we missed on that topic before we move to our next burning question?
I think I'll just tie a little bow around it and say that Pluset is nothing to be scared of. But I know there are some individuals that are set on using follotropin. I totally get it. But I just want everyone, I hope the takeaway from this conversation this morning is that if your animals are prescribed on Pluset through Transova or any other business, that you should see similar results. There is no reason to be afraid of using Pluset as a secondary option or if it becomes your primary option. And at this point, I don't think we've had a lot of people that are like, well, I don't want to switch to Pluset because if it's not going to be around forever, then what's the point in switching? Well, right now we have so many units available with that were brought to the United States by the company that us running out, I don't think is going to be an issue. So if you do find that your animals work, you switch the playset, your animal's working for some reason way better on that product, she just responds way better to that product, you don't have to be worried right now that you're never going to be able to get it again, because the company itself is trying to get it approved in the United States. And we still have enough product from our internal stores and what they brought to the United States to get us through 2026.
Perfect. Thank you for that. So we'll switch gears here a little bit to our next burning question for Repro with Rihanna here. We're moving into the heat of embryo making season. Now is the time to build up your bank so that you can put them all in here in the next month or so. There's a lot of questions, and I was just at the Ohio Beef Expo, and we had a lot of questions about, should I go non-stim? Should I do the one shot? Should I do the four shot? Do you see, or maybe talk a little bit about those different protocols and, you know, when it comes to setting up your donors for IVF aspirations?
No stim, one shot, and four shot are going to be our main protocols that we're going to set your donor up on. So no stim means that she is not receiving any FSH. So she is not prescribed on follotropin or Placet. She comes in, you did not give her any shots. You show up the day of OPU, we OPU her, we send her home. If you're giving a one-shot protocol or administering a one-shot protocol, that is means that you're giving one shot of FSH, whether it be Placet or follotropin, and that'll be at a double concentrated dose. So you're only having to get your cow in one time, give her the one shot 48 hours before the OPU, we OPU her, and then you guys move on, take her home. A four-shot protocol is going to be a little more labor intensive. So at that point in time, we usually add in a shot of GnRH, like a cisterellin on the front end, and then you're giving four shots over, and those are usually spaced out by 12 hours. So, I mean, you're getting your cow into the chute about five times. So just, it's more handling, but our four shot schedules are usually the schedules we put donors on. If the client says, okay, we want to try to maximize our efforts of making as many embryos as possible in like two runs, and that's it, we're going to probably prescribe you on a four-shot schedule just so we can grow those follicles to the best size possible, mature them all, and give them the best opportunity to actually become an embryo. Now, when it comes to deciding, okay, should we put a cow on a one-shot, four-shot, no stim? A lot of it comes down to what the client wants to do. It depends on how much time the client wants to put in giving the shots, and if they want to spend a little extra money on the follotropin or the Placet, which would be your stimulation product. And so really, if the client is like, nope, I just want to see what I can get for my donor, I don't have time to go out there and give shots, let's go on a no stim. Let's see how she does that first time around. If she makes embryos without needing the shots, then we're good to go and we'll just keep rolling her on no stim. If you guys don't have a lot of time, but you still want to get a little bit of a just some effect from that dose of FSH, that's when I suggest a one shot. Four shot is for those individuals that really want to maximize their efforts of creating as many embryos as possible. Or if we have a problem donor of some sort, we're going to put her on a four shot schedule. But a lot of that comes from like a conversation with the client.
That's a lot of good information that you're putting out there. So I'm going to go back kind of to two points, but the results end of it. But also, we like to talk at TransOva about how every donor is different. You mentioned the client choice plays a big part into which shot protocol. But if you're analyzing a donor as an individual, how do you, as Repro with Rihanna, determine which protocol is best for embryo production? Does breed come into play, age? Like, what are the specifics that you yourself are analyzing if you were recommending a shot protocol for an individual?
Okay, that's a great question. So what I'm looking at, I'm just starting out with, we're going to start with breed. Breed and age are going to be the two things I look at. If I've already ran this donor as well, like for an OPU, and maybe she didn't perform quite like we were expecting her to on a no stim, that's when I'm going to be like, okay, we need to look at a few other parameters. So the other thing, and I'm going to get a little sciencey here. I've talked about this before on the podcast a couple episodes ago, but it's all about the antral follicle count. So this is about how many follicles your cow will bring to the surface every every time she has a follicular wave. So when you guys get your results and you say, okay, how many oocytes did my cow make this time? And we say 25. Most likely that cow is going to have an antral follicle count of, we'll say 25 to 35. So we'll say that she's kind of an average to high antral follicle count cow. So I take that number into consideration when I'm also setting those schedules, because those cows that have lower antral follicle count, so say your cow generally gives 15 or less oocytes, a lot of times we're going to consider her a low antral follicle count cow, which means it's harder to make embryos off of her. She's a lot less fertile than maybe her counterparts would be that would be a high antral follicle count animal. So what ends up happening with those animals that have less than 15, those are the ones I see we really need to focus on giving some sort of FSH. And those usually work really well with a four-shot schedule. One-shot schedule isn't quite enough because those animals need to see like an extensive period of time being exposed to FSH. Whereas like your higher follicle count animals, they just need the one shot that's going to help prime those follicles and we move on. So from an individualistic perspective, we're looking, of course, at breed and age because that has a huge factor. But if we have that antral follicle count information, we're going to use that as well. So just in general, if we're looking at heifers versus cows, heifers are going to receive less FSH than the cows will receive just because they're smaller, they're naive to the product, that sort of thing. If we're comparing breeds, so we say beef breeds, your Simmentals are going to receive less FSH than your Angus will, because Simmentals are notorious for making a lot of embryos on average, and they don't need a lot of help. So they're most likely going to be on a one shot on a lower dose, whereas your Angus might be on a one shot, but maybe a mil higher sort of thing. So that's kind of where the breed part of this comes into play. I'll speak a little bit on the dairy side. On the dairy side, we don't stimulate the donors near as much. Most clients on the dairy side will use a no-stim schedule. But if we are stimulating, a lot of times if we've got show cattle coming in on the dairy side, we're going to use a four-shot. It is very rare that we use one shot on dairy. It just generally doesn't work as well in the system as a four shot does. A four shot gives us way more consistent results in our dairy animals, which is why we really don't, you're not going to see many dairy animals that are going to be scheduled on a one shot through Transova.
So questions, I have many with that. I guess first off, you're talking about knowing history of the follicle count, intra-follicle counts. You know, if somebody is running a donor for the first time, how would they know that? Or, you know, do you recommend just doing non-stim first to get just see what she has naturally? Or what does that conversation look like?
That is a great question, because a lot of times we're not going to know the antral follicle count. That's like in a beautiful, perfect setting where we did some sort of reproductive exam of the donor before we scheduled her. And that's just, it's not going to happen, right? So that's when we really focus on age and we focus on breed at that point in time. And then we have the conversation with the client. If they are going to run this animal several times throughout the season to try to bank up a lot of embryos, so I'm going to say do four different OPU sessions over our spring season. And I'm going to say, yeah, let's just start her on no-stim, just see how she does. And then we'll go from there. And we'll kind of just give her a chance to go without drugs. But if this client is like, nope, I'm ready, let's stim. I want to use stim no matter what. We've got some schedules in mind that we know are good schedules to start on just based on historical data that we've pulled from the breed and the specific age. So for example, like if you're going to run your Angus cow, say she's 3 years old, running her for the first time, you know you want a stimulator, we'll probably suggest like a one shot, and she's going to go on like 2.5 cc's of FSH, and that would be for follitropin. If you were okay with spending a little more time and you're like, I want to get the best bang for my buck, let's just go for it, we can give you a four shot schedule. And that would be like on 8 cc's, but you're giving it over 4 shots. So we've got like enough experience and data that we can kind of get just some basic information about your cow and get her started. But really, it does come down to what does the client want? And I think Sarah was, and we can talk about this now, or we can talk about it later. Sarah was kind of alluding to wanting to know results. Okay, so we're talking about stimulation. Is it beneficial from a results perspective to stimulate our animals? Like, are we going to get that many more embryos? Every donor is different. So that's our little asterisk at the bottom of the screen right now, is every donor is different. But on average in our system, you're going to get one more embryo on average per OPU if you stimulate your animals. So it's really how valuable are those embryos to you. And that dose of FSH that you're giving, we'll say you're spending less than $100 on the FSH. Are you going to be able to recoup that by having like that one extra embryo? Like, is that one extra embryo worth that much to you?
Yeah, the math has to math for you on that one. Yeah. And you have to, as you said, think of your long-term goals. And obviously, you know, a lot of beef producers in our neck of the woods anyway have jobs outside of the farm. And, you know, do you have time, or if it's in the middle of planting or harvest, do you have time to run those donors an extra time through the chute? You know, and so I think those are things to consider. So great points there. My other question on this topic is, you know, you mentioned that dairy donors either do better on no stim or four shot. Maybe do you have any background or research as to why that is?
Not really. We've tried a little one shot in dairy donors, and I cannot give you a biological reason as to why we haven't seen super consistent results using one shot in dairy donors. We are absolutely open to try. I know we have some clients that do use one shot in dairy donors and get along with it really well. But sometimes it seems like the dairy animals already have kind of a lower to average antral follicle count. So it's just a little bit harder to make embryos off of them in general. So it seems like they need to see, if we're going to stimulate them, they need to see a little more FSH over a longer period of time, which is where the four-shot schedule would come into play. And I can kind of give you guys an idea. So when I say like dairy donors are a little bit harder to make embryos off of, it's because like on average right now within our system, we're averaging 9.1 viable embryos on our beef animals. But then on the dairy side of things, they're at 5.2 average embryos per OPU. So it's just a complete, like we are dealing with two completely different animals when it comes to beef and dairy. But it just seems like something about them being a little lower antral follicle count, a little less fertile than your beef animals, really impacts their ability to respond to that one shot schedule. So then that's when it's like, okay, do you give the one shot and it doesn't really change anything? You waste some money on that? Or do we just run or no stim? And a lot of times our clients will decide on the dairy side, let's just run or no stim. But they're also running a lot more frequently than our beef clients.
Rihanna, you've run through a lot of information about a lot of different options that has a lot of different factors that play into it. The only thing that I think I'd like you to touch on briefly before I go into the next question is, you know, we've talked multiple times about how every donor is different. Maybe give some background on how Transova has never had a one-size-fits-all approach. Like, these aren't new options that we're just rolling out this year. They've always been options. Kind of give a little bit of history into how we've always kind of had that approach, if that makes sense.
I think so. And if I go off on a tangent, just bring me back a little bit. But yeah, I mean, yeah, this is not a new concept at all. And I remember, I think it's been 2 years since I talked about something somewhat similar on the podcast. And how we take this every donor is an individual approach. And so this has been how we have been running things since I've been here, since before I've been here. You know, we look at your donor as its own patient and decide, okay, what is best for this cow? And so we're just able to now share with you even more information on, okay, here's how to make a better informed decision. That's kind of why I'm giving you this information today. But yeah, this has been going on for a long time. We historically, many, many years ago, we used to dose a lot higher than we do now. So you probably noticed over time as well, if your cow is still receiving FSH, the dose has actually gone down. And that's because we realized our system and the animals themselves don't need as much FSH during those shots as to what we thought 20 years ago. Now we can give less and still get the same result or better. So really, the science itself is just coming a long way. And we have a lot of clients that still run no stim, like, and that is totally fine. And again, it comes down to, we're always willing to have a conversation with the client on, you know, what is your goal at the end of the day, on number of embryos you need, when you need them by, that sort of thing. So really, this is just something we are doing. We're just providing you with the most recent information that we have to help you make the most informed decisions based on all of the data we've been pulling in the past 10 years. Perfect. Doing the same approach.
I knew you'd be able to put a very beautiful bow on that question, just because there's times I have conversations with clients, you know, at a show or an event, and they say, well, I went to this X because you only use FSH. And I just think that's kind of a misunderstanding or a myth about Transova, is that we only do it one way or we won't, you know, take your donor. And I think that's just so completely wrong, because we've always kind of had that every donor is different approach. So it's nothing new for us to manipulate or change how we do things based on the results that we have in your individual program and donor. So thank you for doing such a great job with that. Not switching gears, but same topic, different approach. We've been talking about shot protocols. You know, we're in the midst of breeding season. If you're a beef client, a lot of clients are also preparing to put in embryos. And we have clients that put a lot of time, money, effort, planning, hope into their embryo programs. Maybe go into embryo stages and heats of recipients. Kind of tell us what the stage of an embryo means and what they're trying to align when they're putting in these embryos during this time of year.
All right, you bet. So we're going to get somewhat technical in this conversation a little bit. So bear with me, guys. So we'll start with whenever you guys receive your embryos, or even if you're buying embryos online, you're going to receive embryos and you're going to receive a stage and a grade with those embryos. So the grade of the embryo is the actual quality of the embryo at the time that it was frozen or at the time it's being shipped to you. So the quality of the embryo is going to be ranked on a number scale. So that's going to be a 1, 2, or 3. Ones and twos are the grade one and grade two embryos are going to be your freezable embryos. So they're deemed as a higher quality embryo. Grade threes can still be transferred. We still get good preg rates off of grade three embryos. They are just not well equipped enough to be frozen and survive that freeze thaw process. Okay, so we've got our grades figured out. That's one side of things. So then we have our stage. We have a stage of embryos that we work with as well. So the stage refers to the actual, I'm going to call it the stage in development as to where this embryo is. So where is it at in its actual development phase from fertilization to where it is now when we're looking at it under the microscope and when we're about to freeze it or we're about to transfer it into your cow as a fresh embryo. So the stages are also numbers, and you're going to see those on IVF embryos listed a lot of times as a 5, 6, or 7. Sometimes you'll see freshes that are an 8, and sometimes you'll see a stage nine, but it's very rare that you're going to see an 8 or a 9 when it comes to an IVF embryo. We're usually focusing most on 5, 6, and 7 for our stages. So when it comes to kind of the myth around putting embryos in and the day of the heat, so I'll talk to you guys a bit about the actual day of heat that we want these cows to be in when we go to transfer embryos. So you guys synchronize your cows. You know you're transferring today. We'll say on this beautiful Wednesday that I am currently recording this podcast. And so you should have seen your heats last Wednesday, that ideally. And so, but we have a range, a number range. So we can say 6.5 days to 8 days post heat is the best time to put our IVF embryos in. Okay. So we've got a ton of numbers we've just talked about, right? So we've talked about grade, talked about stage, and we've talked about day post heat for the cows themselves. So the myth, or kind of the general practice that has gone around before, is that you should match up the stage of your embryo, because that's where they're at in development, with the day of heat that your cow is in on the day you go to transfer, the day post heat. So that is kind of the general practice that kind of it's surfacing throughout the industry, right? So I am here to tell you, and I'll just cut to the chase on this one and then we can dissect it a little bit. But when it comes to Transova IVF embryos, and it's the same with ET embryos as well. We've looked at it on ET embryo side too. But when you're putting in a grade one or a grade two embryo, which is what your frozens are going to be, or if your quality freshes, that's going in, you do not need to worry about what's day post-heat your cows are at, as long as they are within that window of 6.5 to 8 days. Yes, we know that they can stretch to the 8.5 days on the back end. That's okay. You just might see a little bit of a decrease in your conception rate, depending on the mating of the embryo. Same on the front side. So you can put embryos into a day six heat. But again, it's just going to be a little more variable because it's not as ideal for embryos unless it's within that window of the day 6.5 to day 8. Okay. So how do we dissect that? Like, do we need to dissect that a little bit more? What questions do you guys have?
Well, I think that's really great information, because I think that is questions that come up of, you know, my IVF embryos are a little later stage just because they grow a little faster in that culture state. But ET embryos, it's more common to see like a stage 4, 5, or 6. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's just the way that those embryos mature in their state. And so I think that's where people get a little tripped up of like, why are these ET embryos are a smaller stage rather than the sixes or sevens? And I don't want those. But you have to understand ET and IVF are a little bit different. I think the one question that I have, so I had one of my cows ran last spring and they froze an 8-1. So a stage 8 and a grade 1 embryo. Maybe talk a bit about what you would recommend for putting that embryo in. Is there an ideal time, or is there not, going off what you just said?
So since we don't have those happen very often, I don't have a ton of data. So when it comes to, I can't give you a statistically significant answer because I don't have a lot of data, but I can give you my suggestion. And so my suggestion is any of your stage embryos, whether it be a 5, 6, 7, 8, will always perform its best in a day seven cow post heat, no matter what. Like, she's just going to perform the best. That's the best time. And so really the 8, your 8-1 would be fine to go into a day 6.5 to day 8 heat. But if I was putting it in my own cows, just playing around, I would make sure I was putting that 8-1 into a 7-day heat cow, or I would go with an 8-day heat cow. But really, I would focus on the 7-day just so I had that nice buffer of a window on either side. But I'm saying that because I don't have a ton of data on that stuff. So the data is extremely variable when you start getting on these outliers of like your stage 8 embryos.
So on a stage 5, 6, or 7 of an IVF embryo, fresh or frozen, we can still be in that 6.5 to 8 day window.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's another random question for transferring embryos. You know, is it increase my preg rate? I'll just put 2 in. How do you feel about that?
Well, if your cow can handle raising 2 calves, then go for it. No. So there's actually a lot of stuff that goes into doing something like this. So the first thing that we have to think of is if you do truly want to put 2 embryos in, and most likely they're going to be going on the same side, so in the same horn, you have to make sure those embryos are the same sex. They cannot be made from conventional semen. Like, you have to make sure that they were reverse sort or sex semen. Otherwise, we get the issues of free Martinism. And that's just silly, because then it's just silly. We don't need to go down that route, right? It's a waste of our money. It's not something I would suggest necessarily. You can do it. And if the client wants to do it, they certainly can. But I think the client needs to have a great idea and a good background on the recip that they're putting those twins in to make sure she has the body capacity and the space and the nutrients available to take care of both of them. Because once you put two in there, it's now they're competing for space, they're competing for nutrients, that sort of thing. And if mom can't support both of them, then you've wasted essentially one of those embryos if both stick. Because the minute you think both of these won't stick, they will both stick. But I will tell you, we do have some clients where, you know, they do go this route, but they are also working with smaller body weight, with calves that will come out at a smaller body weight. So they're just smaller calves in general. And so sometimes they will pair up like their grade threes if they're wanting to get some fresh grade three embryos in, that sort of thing. But that is their choice. And we definitely have the conversation with them before that they have to be sexed embryos. And that cow has to be able to take care of both of those calves just in case both embryos stick.
Emily just really wants more Simmentals. Is that what I'm understanding, Emily?
Listen, I got to increase my chances of increasing my herd. Okay, but I also did not use sex semen. So I will not be doubling up on embryos. And with my luck, that would happen. So just a question that you get randomly that, you know, to throw out there.
Which I think can bring up maybe a whole nother episode, but like common misconceptions, or I know, Rihanna, you've talked a lot about recipient management, and like there's so much that goes into that really determines the success of a program. Are there any other like common misconceptions you'd want to clear up?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I don't know if I have any other. I mean, I think we really just need to, I wanted to make sure I got across to you all that you do not need to have your tech when we come out or your vet matching the stage of your embryo to the day of heat of your cow. Like when it's a Transova created embryo, you do not need to do that. So as long as you're within that day 6.5 to day 8 window. The other thing, and I don't know if it's a common misconception, but I think sometimes people forget how much nutrition plays a role into your success and your transfer rate success into your recipients. So really, and I think we've talked about this before, the health that your recipients is in, the nutrition, the plane of nutrition that they are on, all has a significant impact on their ability to carry that embryo. And then also provide nutrients to that conceptus while it's growing to then produce the calf you are hoping to get from that mating. So we cannot forget about nutrition, minerals especially. So like a free choice mineral, I would really suggest you have some sort of free choice mineral out there for your cows or mixed into a TMR of some sort for your recips, because there's been a lot of studies that have shown how impactful minerals can be on supporting reproduction in general and their ability to get pregnant. The other thing we want to keep in mind is we need to give those cows time after they calved the last time to heal a little bit. That's why we say we like to have that 60 days roughly between the time that they calved and the time we're putting embryos in again to go ahead and breed them, because that is for the cow herself, because we want her uterus to be healed up from carrying a calf, giving birth, and back to where it should be and all of her hormones functioning appropriately. And it's usually going to take 45 to 60 days to get to that point. That's why we say 60 days is good for a postpartum period. So there are a lot of different things that go into it, but really that's a lot of the specific stuff. And nutrition is nutrition, nutrition, nutrition. That's going to be one of your main things. But you don't want your cows too fat at the same time. Sorry. Overweight. You don't want them overweight from a recipient side. You don't want them too thin. It really is important to have them in a good body condition score.
Yeah, that's the issue with my one donor cow. She's a little hefty because she likes the snacks.
Same.
Yeah, same. One question that came up about heats that I wanted to circle back to, Rihanna, is, you know, we get the question of matching. But when I was an embryologist too, I can remember Dr. Paul asking clients of, did you see her in a good standing heat? And I think sometimes people will set up their recips and then let them go and don't heat check. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of seeing them in an actual good standing heat?
Yes, absolutely. So when Dr. Paul would ask those clients, was she in a good standing heat? He's essentially asking, you know, was that heat really good? Do we know that she developed a corpus luteum, ovulated that follicle like she needed to develop that corpus luteum? It's a good corpus luteum. Like, she is in fact cycling. Because you can see some cows kind of like, if they're not enough days postpartum, they're not quite cycling yet, they're just not going to show you like a good standing true heat. And then sometimes we get some fertility issues if the cow doesn't necessarily want to, like, you don't see her standing in heat or she's not consistent and stuff. And then that's going to impact your transfer rate. But when it comes to them standing in a good heat, it is nice to see. Now, if you don't have time to go out and heat check 100 cows, I get it, and write it down in your little notebook. Each cow that was in heat, I totally understand. A lot of our clients use heat patches. And a lot of times we can tell, even as a technician, when the cows are coming through the chute, I can tell if that cow is in a good standing heat because of how pink or whatever color your patches are. And pink is just my example, but how pink that patch is. But that is extremely important, because if she's in a standing heat, we know she is truly ready to receive that embryo, because hormonally she is where she should be in her cycle.
I love when Rihanna gets sciencey. I know you said earlier, like, hold on, I'm about to get sciencey, but I love it. And I feel like we could stay on here all day long. But in respect of time, I feel like we could keep going and going and going, but maybe we'll set those other topics up that we could do for another, you know, another episode with Repo with Rihanna moving forward. So I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Is there anything else, Rihanna, that you were hoping to talk about today that we were not smart enough to ask you, or that you think clients would want to know?
I think the only thing would be, and this is me coming to you guys, like our clients, as a technician, like someone that's coming to your farm and putting in embryos. It is, we want you to succeed. We want to give you the best preg rate you've ever gotten, but you have to help us, especially by managing your cattle. Making sure you know where they're at postpartum, you're feeding them appropriately, they're getting the minerals they need. But it also comes down to, do you have the proper chute system for us to work in? Because if the chute, you know, if the cows are constantly laying down, that's going to impact our ability to get the embryo to where it needs to go. And I know this only ties in a little bit with the embryo transfer side that we are talking about, but it's just things that I see when I go on farm. And the handling of the cattle, you want to be quiet, handling them as much as possible so we don't increase their stress, because stress also impacts their ability to conceive and take that embryo. So it's just, there are a lot of factors that go into having a good preg rate. And the guys and gals that do get that good conception rate from their embryos, they have all of these things nailed down to a T. And they're heat checking their animals. They know if they're in good standing heat or not. I'll have clients sometimes that will bring me cows that are not, they say to me, well, I didn't really see her in heat, but can you palpate her and see where she's at? Kind of, but the chances of me wanting to put an embryo in there that is probably a very expensive embryo for you is pretty slim, because you didn't see her in heat. So we don't know where she's at in her cycle. Yes, I can look and I can make a judgment call, but I just want to make sure clients understand that, yes, I can make a judgment call, but even that sort of question and me going in there making that call might question the results on the back end, just because we don't know where that cow was truly at in her cycle or if she was ready to have an embryo put in. That's kind of my soapbox, I guess. Those are some of my soapbox things that's, I really want our clients to be set up for success. And so these are just little things that I've seen, between the individuals that are doing well, but the individuals that are doing really, really well. It's just some of that management stuff.
I feel like it's a giant puzzle and all the pieces have to fit together just right. And so not only are we trying to manage a lot of those puzzle pieces, but it's also up to the clients to manage a lot of those puzzle pieces. And it all has to work together kind of seamlessly as much as Mother Nature will allow us to anyway. So that's a whole nother part of the puzzle that we can't always account for, but we try our best.
Absolutely.
If you've been listening to this and you have more burning questions for Rihanna, make sure to let us know and we can continue kind of on her series. She enjoys it, I think, right, Rihanna?
At least pretend. Ask all the questions. I love talking about this stuff. I love reproduction and sciencey stuff. That's my forte. People person, not so much, but I can talk about science.
Well, we appreciate all of the qualities that you have, Rihanna. And so we will go ahead and wrap up this episode, but look forward to more episodes down the road. Thank you again for joining us today. And we will see you on another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast.
Of course. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.